Hey, Dave here from the Breakfast with Manny podcast, which comes from when my co-host Emmanuel, also known as Manny, and I used to meet regularly for breakfast. When we were discussing the shifting landscape of manhood, mostly by sharing our experiences and our struggles, as well as my coaching courses and my entrepreneurial experience, we realized many men could benefit from discussing these topics. So Breakfast with Manny is going to explore the unseen patterns that sabotage men from realizing their potential, healing, and getting the life, sex, career, and health they want, leading to a healthy masculine life. So welcome to the next episode of Breakfast with Manny. Today is going to be all about love, which is a four-letter word, as I joke. Really excited. We have a special guest here. I'll introduce in a moment. Firstly, we have my can't be breakfast without Manny. So,
eight years and going, Dave. Yeah, so yeah. I'm excited. A new episode, and I'm always excited when we have guests, and specifically on topics like love, because I think I love people. I think some people love me, but then what is love? So I think it's a great, I'm very happy to have you here, and you know, hopefully we'll have a good discussion.
Yeah. So Sarah, I'll introduce you in 1 second. I'll just make a comment that again, Breakfast with Manny, the genesis was you and I was asked to help mentor you a bit. And we started talking about life, especially as men in, you know, the late teens and the early 20s. And there's some challenges out there, as you know, so we want to see what we can do about furthering what we can call healthy masculinity. And again, I'll go back to, so we have Sarah Heppner-Walson with us, so a special guest. Sarah, you and I know each other originally. You do graphic recording, which always blew my mind. Sarah draws meetings on walls, kind of. And her interpretive abilities always amazed me, but we kept in touch. And we both made a bit of a left turn, like as I moved back from my corporate world and you moved back from that into more being an author. So I'm super excited about your book. So I Choose Love. And when I read it and when you and I met, your passion and it just poured out of you, which is pretty cool. So like maybe you could tell us a little bit about yourself first and how you came on this turn into doing this kind of work.
First of all, I'm so happy to be here. Always happy to talk about love. So I'm a very visual thinker. I've been doing a lot of work, as they say, throughout my life, just kind of figuring out myself and how I want to be in the world. And I'm a journaler, and my journals were filled with graphics. That's just the way my brain thinks. And when COVID, really the genesis of this book was COVID, I had no intention of writing a book ever. But when everyone was having such a horribly hard time during COVID, when people were feeling so alone, when they were so desperate for the state of the world, so distraught, I needed to put something into the world, and I just felt like I had this thing to give. I didn't know that it was about love. I only figured out the title as I was doing the last page, actually. And so I just kind of announced to my family, yeah, I need to write this book, and I need to take 2 or 3 hours every day. And they kind of went, okay, what book? And that was my COVID project. So it took about a year. And every day I went to my desk and spent 2 to 3 hours, whether it was productive or not, because that's what you're meant to do as a writer, and came up with the book.
We'll have to get you on our podcast on procrastination, maybe, so you can like help people. You
know? I'm a master. Yeah.
Sit down. Manny, you have a couple questions for Sarah before we start about herself? Well, are we good?
Now that you mentioned the book, I'm curious how, so you mentioned COVID, how did that inspiration start? And how does that, like, I wonder, a lot of people tell me, yeah, I've started a book or I've wrote a book. How does that process start? Do you just decide one day and you start writing? It's not an easy thing to decide to, again, put 3 hours a day into something like this.
Oh no, I have so much respect for writers. It is a process. It takes so much discipline and determination. I think it was actually brewing in me for a while, not necessarily writing a book like this. I did, I assist in workshops. That's how I work professionally. And I did a workbook that kind of went, that I worked with the facilitator to create, and it supported what they were doing in the workshop. And a lot of the stuff idea that I do is strength finding, leadership skills. People call them soft skills. I don't think they're soft. As I was creating this workbook, it was very much along the lines of my book. It was very graphic. It asked deep questions. It was a lot of soul searching. So, of course, it was a great workshop. And that was really, really satisfying for me. So I think once I did that workbook, something was brewing, but it took the desperation of COVID, I think, to really push me to... I had to do something, and I felt that I had this to give. I kind of felt like it was my gift. And so I just went with it. It was definitely a passion. I would wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning and go into my office for 2 or 3 hours. Oh. And my husband would say, "Where were you?" "Oh, you know."
Well, what's great about that is when you mention giving your gifts to the world, like one of our, one of Breakfast with Manny's like Bible books, it's an obnoxious title, but it's called The Way of the Superior Man. David Dida's book, and he talks about giving your gifts to the world is so important.
Yep.
So this is pretty cool. You said something that I want to get to right away, because hopefully we haven't lost too many people already, but when you get into the softer things, as you said, like love, a lot of men are threatened by that. A lot of guys recoil from that. They're just like, and vulnerability and those kinds of things. So any words for the guys that are close to turning off to like maybe stick around when it comes to like their need for love and recognizing that?
Oh man, we could go in so many directions.
Yeah.
I think I would start with how you define love, because there are so many, so many meanings to love. In Sanskrit, there's 96 words for love.
Wow. Okay, cool.
Because there are so many different kinds, types of love. Yeah. You know, I love you as a friend. Yeah. I love my husband as my partner. Yeah. I love my mom. I love my dog. You know, there are so many ways that we can feel love and that we can give love. So I think it's really important to define what that means and which part of it you're referring to. It's okay. Not all romance.
No. No, we're going to get into that, because the romance love is kind of funny, and we'll play a little game later. Right on my phone. Play a little game. We'll have some fun with that. Yeah, I mean, where do I go from here? Where I'd like to go and ask you is, when people, I'm sure people ask you this as someone who wrote a book on love, like you've identified it, but is there an answer to what is love? Is there a simple answer?
So I was reading a book by Michael Singer. He wrote a wonderful book called The Untethered Soul many years ago, and now he has a sequel, and it's...
Living Untethered.
Living Untethered. And there was one part of this book that spoke to me so much, because he talked about love as a force.
Mm.
It's a life force. It's what humans are born to do. And I guess if I had to think of one big bucket of definition, it's living from your heart. It's yeah. living from that life force that feeds you, and then that goes out into the world, and it becomes a give and take kind of thing, just naturally. So that's how that's how I would bucket it.
But I love that bucket. I love that bucket. And I'll say, you know, so I do coaching, as well. And sometimes with people that are really struggling with self-love, which we're going to get into, I have them imagine themselves, sounds weird, but it works. Have them imagine themselves as a baby and go like, now do you deserve love? Like, how does that baby deserve love? And so I think life is a process of taking these layers off. Layers get put on.
Yep.
And we get armor and we get baggage. Trouble and baggage.
Yep.
That block love. But you know, at the end of the day, the one thing a baby obviously needs food and water, but a baby needs love. Like, a baby will die without love.
Yep.
And I think we're all like that. We just don't want to acknowledge it because it makes us feel a little bit frail, but it's kind of interesting. So that's kind of cool. I mean, maybe tell us a little bit about kind of being love more than just doing love. That state of being. What does that look like in your mind when you're emanating love.
So for me, well, and I think what I find really interesting about the question is you're using love as a verb. And you can just say, oh, I love you, but doesn't really mean anything. You have to do the loving.
Yes.
And so I love that being or doing, all of it is, it's an active thing. Otherwise, it can just die. You know, you have to actually make a choice to love. So being love for me, it's a feeling in my body. It's actually it's a physical thing for me. Okay. And if I feel, for me, my spot is I get tight in my chest. And, you know, I work at the practice of loving now. And so if I feel that, I'm like, okay, what is going on? And I really try and identify why I'm feeling that. Because when I don't, I'm just living authentically. I'm living from, I'm being true to myself. And that, for me, that's self-love.
And it's our nature to love, right? So, you know, a couple things. One is I should mention we are going to dig much deeper into the untethered soul and living untethered in later issues of the podcast. Michael Singer's brilliant.
Such a good
book.
It's
the most incredible spiritual book. But he talks about, and when you said that, it really hit me. He talks a lot about opening versus closing. We close, we open.
Yep.
But I think something that's really germane to our podcast is, you know, a lot of guys, they get into, like, we've seen in the world a lot of competition that's unhealthy, right? Like the win at all costs scenario. And I did in a previous podcast talk about, we had a hockey team in Canada that was like slush funding for lawyers for sexual assault, right? And my point being, like, winning with sexual assaulters isn't winning. So it's a little bit along the lines that all this competitiveness can sometimes block that and you can close off. So it's kind of an interesting way to look at things. So the other thing
I think it's not only competition. Yeah. I think men for so long have been conditioned to live in a certain way and to have their power in a certain way that it's hard to break that pattern. And if you look back millennia, you know, it's power over instead of power with. And that's hard to change. It's changing. I think it is. But
it's coming.
Yeah.
We're working on it.
Can you give me an example of what you mean by power over? What kind of things or behaviors would you say that are difficult to change?
Well, you know what? You could even just look at an office scenario where your boss is considered the leader, right? And if it's power over, he's going to tell you exactly what to do in his way to get the results that he wants. Whereas if it's power with, he's going to be there to support you, maybe to get to the same place, but in a way that works for you. We're all different. So it's a working together instead of a hierarchical
thing. And what I see right now is, I'm talking here in Canada because I think it's the scenario we probably see the most, but I've seen that leadership style change probably because of that message, because we talk about it more often. So that, I think that's really cool. I was just curious about the link with masculinity there. But I guess if we go back to, again, as you said, a lot of like, you know, hundreds and thousands of years, and it ended up being how we ran things of just, you do this like this, or you do,
well, I think like, it was also survival.
Survival, exactly.
Right? Back then it was survival. You know, women were brought into the world to have babies and nurture, and men were brought into the world to protect and provide for their families. Yeah. And that brought with it aggression. Like, back then, that's what you needed. Nature. Unfortunately, now it's still fight or flight, but we don't need those tools anymore. It's, you know?
No, and you're raising a really important point, which is the actual opposite of love isn't really hate. There was a term I read. It was hate is love standing on its head. It's fear. Exactly.
Yeah.
It's fear.
Yeah.
And we do live in a world of fear.
Yeah.
And that is what really can block us a lot of times. But, you know, I'll give you an example of, like, just as much as we've come far, Manny, in the corporate world somewhat, on some levels, You know, I just had a coaching client that told me a story. She was speaking up in a banking meeting for financing. And they asked her for financials and she was going to give it. And her boss didn't like it. He kicked her chair. Like, I mean, who does that, right? So I think one of the better quotes I've ever heard around this is, it is time for us to look to going from the love of power to the power of love. Mm-hmm. Trouble is, it sounds super cheesy and people get like, they get all grossed out by it. But at the end of the day, like, I totally rambled on the competition thing. I lost my train of thought, so I'm going to go back to it. What I wanted to say was, I got into this, my son's a big barbecuer. So I got into this barbecue showdown show. And it was, they all wanted to win really badly. And they competed really, really hard. One guy's barbecue fell apart. They ran over and helped. Because exactly. The guy said this. He said, I'd rather compete with you and have you do your best and win in that arena. And that, like, and what it was the ending of this was quite poignant. Like, these three people who were dying to win loved each other at the end. Big hugs, friends for life. And, you know, we see that in life. Like, when a tragedy happens, we drop the bullshit. We all help. We all pitch in. We feel so connected. And then we kind of melt back into our old habits. So, yeah, it's kind of an interesting thing.
That's interesting for sure.
Yeah.
Sarah, I wanted to get back to your point. You were talking about love before. And you mentioned realizing or trying to go deep to understand, to some extent, love. Mm-hmm. I was wondering if there's such a thing as loving consciously and loving unconsciously, and if one is better than the other, or if it's something we do at the same time.
Yes, I think they're at the same time, but they don't have to be. That's a really interesting question. So I think love can be a choice. You can choose to love yourself. Actually, I think you have to choose to love yourself, because it's really easy to just go through life beating yourself up or not being good enough or living with shame. Or I think the majority of people actually do that. And until you make that choice, that conscious choice, you can live in that way your whole life. And once you make the choice, it takes practice. So, yeah, I think the conscious part of it for sure is a factor. But there's also, you can fall, I mean, I fell in love with my husband. Was it conscious? Did I make it happen? Well, I don't know. I loved his shoulders and he was really great looking and we just connected, and there was chemistry. And I think there is chemistry. I think we're drawn to certain people because there's a certain there's something draws you together. And to me, that's love. You know, it's not all Harlequin romance kind of stuff. So I actually do think they're both, and they can live together, and I think they can live apart.
That's really interesting. And you didn't mention that part of beating yourself up. Probably a lot of people do that throughout their life. And there's a couple of segments, you and I talked about this like extensively, I think, of dealing with that. But my question then, just following up question on that, is do you think, or do you have any suggestions for people watching this who are living in that current state? And maybe it's unconscious, right? Maybe we don't even realize, but they wake up every single day, you know, hate my life, things are not well, I don't feel good about myself. Maybe just a couple of tips, or...
Yes, and I'll just add to that. I think often we don't even realize that we're not loving ourselves.
Right.
We're so used to being a certain way. We have our learned reactions, we have our triggers, and until, you know, you might be aware of it, it's just the way I am. No, I'm just an angry person. No, I'm just short-tempered. No, I'm, you know, whatever that reaction might be. I think most people say, yeah, that's just the way I am. And that could be from the way you were treated as a kid or what people told you, you know, you never finish. You're a starter. You never finish stuff. You're not a finisher. Like,
you're lazy.
Exactly. Yeah. It could be the littlest things, and they stick with us into our adult life. And we think that that's just who we are, when really, like, that's what I call our baggage. Yeah. We have so much baggage to dump. And I think until you're willing to let that, some of that stuff go, it's super hard to love yourself for who you really are.
Two great points in there are awareness. Super key. You can't do anything without awareness. And letting go, which is another topic for another day, which is a very interesting thing. There's a few things that you said I really found interesting. The one thing is patterns are a big thing. We talked about dropping patterns. One of the patterns in the world is beat yourself to greatness, right? It's a huge thing. Like, no, and people won't let go of it because it's almost like they feel subconsciously that they won't survive, right? So there's the beat yourself to greatness. I think, you know, man, you mentioned it, like a lot of people have terrible self-talk. I personally am one of them. I internalized, you know, you too.
We all face it, I guess, to some extent, but the...
yeah.
Let's go.
But there is what percentage, I would say on my end at least, is what percentage of my day, if there's any, but a percentage of my day, do I actually spend on that negative talk versus positive? And I think that's the interesting part when you start changing that. But because you, most of the time you are, at least I know you as... positive most of that, but I guess relatively, you always have that.
I live in my hell by myself. But, no, I mean, you'd be everyone though. Like, so this is very timely actually, because it does dovetail nicely with Michael Singer's book. So he talks about your inner roommate. He's like, if you had a friend who talked to you the way your mind talked to you.
Yeah, you'd tell him to go shove it.
You'd say, fuck off, get out of here. But you never do that, right? So again, it's interesting to just understand there is a purpose behind a lot of it. It's to self-protect. It's internalized from your family. Like, I think I said it to you once. Like, so my dad's favorite question was either what's wrong or what the fuck's wrong with you? Depended which version. What's wrong with you? And I find myself still to this day.
What's wrong with me?
I'm like, what's wrong with me? And if you ask and seek and you shall find, right?
Yeah.
And I come up with a whole bunch of things and I'm like, whoa, 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 whoa. I'm in the pattern. And I, one of my teachers, I love it. He says, a pattern known is a pattern blown, right? Mm-hmm. So when I know I'm in the pattern, and now I have a choice. So, but it leads us beautifully into something that we all struggle with. And it's super difficult for some reason, given the way we're raised, I think, and the times we're living in. Self-love. I think there's a lot of confusion around what is self-love. There's a lot of confusion that self-love is selfish. Right?
Yes.
So can you expand on self-love for a bit?
I'm a really good example of that side of self-love.
Okay.
You know, I'm a giver. I want to make sure everyone is okay before me. Like, I put myself last in line.
Okay.
I've been doing it for as long as I can remember. I have a beautiful little family and they've all come before me. And yeah, I felt like it was being selfish. Mm. And selfish to me has always been a bad, bad word.
Sure.
We're not selfish. Like, growing up, no selfish. And I have had to come to terms with that and find another way to look at putting me first. And answering my needs, because I'm going to be better with everyone else if I'm okay. Yeah. You know, it's like when you're a parent and they say, you know, you need to fill yourself up so that you actually have something to give to your kids. Because if you're running on empty, there's nothing left to give them. Never mind yourself. It's the same kind of thing for me. But it's a struggle. I'm very conscious about it. And... you know, I'm often worried, what are they going to say?
Right.
And it becomes an external thing as much as an internal thing. And it's all made up. It's my problem. It's nobody else's problem but mine. But when I know that I do what's right for me, oh my God, it feels so flipping good. Having hard conversations.
Yeah.
And you work up to it, and I don't know about you. I go down a rabbit hole of what am I going to say? When's the right time? How am I going to do it? What's their reaction going to be? Yeah, but when you have the conversation, oh, man, I have said to myself lightly, I'm really proud of you.
Oh, good. Nice.
Yeah. So it can be work.
Yeah. And self-love to you is what? Like, what is it? Because some people are like, oh, spa, giving yourself a spa day. And some people it's like, I have a comment on it, but I'd like to hear you first. Like, what do you think?
So
what is it?
It could be having a spa day because it's just what I want to do.
Okay.
Not because I deserve a spa day, but it's because that's what I know I need right now. And so that's what I'm going to do. Yeah. It's listening to my soul.
There you go. Yeah. I think that was one big thing. I think it's when you really listen to your heart. Or sometimes with my coaching, what I'll do with people is I'll say, like, what would you tell your best friend if they were going through? Like, I do the exercise.
Yep.
Like
that's a great one.
Right? They've told themselves, they're like, I'm a fucking idiot. I don't know what's wrong with me.
Yep.
I'm damaged. I'm a loser. Like, what if it was your best friend? They're like, I would totally buoy them up. I'd say, hey, you know what? All the time, the same comment. You're human is what comes up. And what's really hard for us, I think, is to give ourselves permission to be human.
Yep.
So I struggled with perfectionism my whole life. I mean, the easy calculation psychologically, perfection, maybe my parents will love me. Sure, great. Nice try. People don't like, we talked about perfection, remember? The smooth billiard ball, nothing sticks to it. People don't even want it, but we think it'll give us something. But I had to break up with perfection, you know? Mm-hmm. So like people do lots of things to get love, whereas understanding we are love. There's a big difference right there.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot of blocking. So I want to pivot to this. Like, for you, what do you think some of the biggest misconceptions are about love?
I guess it depends what kind of love you're talking about.
Oh, different kinds. So we'll say parental love, relationship love, physical love.
Okay, so let's do an easy one.
Yeah.
Relationship love?
Yeah, let's do that one.
Yeah, so it's all romance.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's all the prince and the princess.
Yeah.
And they love each other forever, and they might have a tiff, and then they have great sex and make up and they carry on and there's no work.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like love just carries you through everything and it's all pink clouds and wonderful. Okay. Well,
yeah.
Yeah.
And
it doesn't,
you know,
work like
yet,
that.
What's interesting to me is a lot of people know that sort of, they still are like, yeah, but I'd love it if it happened.
You know what?
Right?
I grew up in a home where my parents were married for 60, whatever it is, years until my dad died. I never heard them argue.
Yeah.
And they had a normal relationship,
yeah,
but they
yeah.
didn't argue in front of us.
Yeah.
So I didn't know about that. My dad was an incredible romantic.
Huh.
So he would leave my love mom little notes and brought her flowers and,
nice.
You know, little gifts. And like yeah. he just treated her so beautifully. And my husband did not grow up in a house like that. Now, his parents had a solid, solid marriage, solid relationship. But they were not physical with each other,
okay.
and my parents were.
Yeah.
And they weren't romantic in that way. And it took me years to not want him to be the romantic that my dad was.
Yeah.
And I know, like, that is not what it's all about. And I always knew it takes work and, you know, but that little picture.
Hard to get it to go away.
So hard.
Manny, I want to ask you, man.
Yeah.
Can I ask you?
Yeah.
Do you have this in you? Do you have this like fizzy little thing that's like, I just want to meet somebody and look across the room and
get the butterflies.
The heavens open.
And, yeah.
Like, do you have that?
So, but I mean, I've been in a relationship for now a while, right?
Yeah.
For 5 years with my
yeah.
girlfriend.
Yeah.
And we also are very different in that aspect. Like,
okay.
I'm very physical.
Yeah.
I'm very physical. That's
yeah.
the way I am. My father was, and my mom were also physical people. My dad's from Mexico, and I think there's a big culture of hugs.
Latin lovers.
Latin.
Yes.
Hot Latin.
Big culture. She's from Colombia, so she's also Latin, but on her side, it's not really huggy. And again, touch doesn't mean love,
yep.
as we mentioned. So
nope.
their family, they are extremely close. But for her, it was really weird. It was really weird at first.
Really?
Who is this guy just touching my shoulder all the time?
Yeah.
Now she's gotten used to it. And I think now she's told me she loves it. Maybe it's not the case, but she's told me she loves it. So I find it very interesting what you just said there about it took you time to process that and then to kind of change your perspective and your way of receiving, to some extent, love. But I'm curious, did you ever communicate, did you ever have that discussion with him?
You mean how many times did we have the discussion?
And what was his reaction?
He's doing his best.
Yeah. He's like, there's nothing wrong with me.
Okay, so
he's doing his best.
Okay.
Yeah.
Honestly, and he really was, and he still is, and he still sometimes doesn't do what I would love him to be doing. But at least now I know, truly, he's doing his best.
You know, that opens a really interesting line of chatting, which is, there's also that pattern out there where, like, a lot of people are like, well, they should just know what I want.
Yep.
You know? Getting your needs met is a very important thing in being a healthy, fulfilled adult. And people think, oh, well, you should just know, you know, and it's kind of
That's right. If you really loved me,
you'd know.
You would know.
Yeah.
And we had that conversation because that's all part of it.
Sure.
Well, why doesn't he know the perfect birthday gift for me?
Right.
Why doesn't he get me a birthday gift every year?
Yeah.
Like really basic stuff. And he would say, but so why don't you just tell me what you want? And then it'll be perfect.
It won't.
But it's just different ways of approaching it. But we always have been able to talk about stuff. Yeah. And I think that has been one of the secrets to our longevity.
I wanted to ask you about that. How many years have you been married?
38.
Wow. Okay, so there you go. Communication, big thing.
Yeah.
Connection and communication are huge. There's no doubt about it. I think it's kind of interesting. One of the other things that I wanted to talk about, I think that's important. So one thing that, before we leave a relationship, love, the modeling that we see in movies, in songs, it's all, not all, but mostly fairy tale stuff, you complete me stuff. I'm going to grab my phone for a second because I want to show you something. I'm going to do the fake exercise because for time. But can you comment on that? Like the whole, like, you complete me and I need you and I need you forever. And
I have three daughters and I always said to them, you need to be good with yourself. And if you end up sharing your life with someone, whoever that someone might be, they're just the cherry on top. But you need to be good with yourself in your life. Because you can't rely on outside, on all those other influences to make you happy. It's not right.
I totally agree. You're set up for a difficult life if that's how you live. I love that message.
Yeah.
I think this is where people go wrong all the time, is that they want something outside to make them happy.
That's right. I'll be happy when. Yeah. I'll be happy if.
And we're going to look at your book because you have a great thing about be. Mm-hmm. And really, it's be happy first. You know, who do you need to be to attract that great relationship?
Or just be. What is be happy? What is happy even? That's a whole other conversation.
Yeah. We might have you for the panel on happiness, but for fun, I'm just using one song as an example. I did this with an ex-girlfriend for fun. I'm like, let's take a look at the models of love and just for fun in songs. I literally did a random search. And one of the songs that came up was like this, like, you are my universe, right? So like, and then I did another one. It was like, I can't live without you. And like, so we have a lot of these.
Oh, all this, you know how many songs are about love and either how you complete me or you have ruined my life.
Right. You've ruined my, there's an awful, Taylor Swift has made a career on that, as it turns out. But yeah, like, this is my point, is like, there's a
you're the problem, right?
Right.
It's all out there.
Out there. Yeah. I'll make a comment there. So there's a guy who I read a lot. His books are incredible. There's a Netflix series it's Osho. I don't know if you've read Osho. Yeah. Osho is really interesting. And he was a bit wild on his Netflix. So like, if you see that, read his books, because his books are amazing. But he just kind of says like this, he goes, let me understand. So you are, let's take you as an example. So Manny, you, before you met your girlfriend, you were okay, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you met your girlfriend. And then some people, when they break up and now you're back to being alone, they completely fall apart, right?
Yeah.
And he's like, but wait a second, weren't you okay before you met them? Like, why are you, what? So we have a lot of models of what's called fusion, which is this unhealthy, like, attachment, neediness, clinginess. So I, in my notes, Sarah, like, I kind of wanted to talk a bit about false love, jealousy, possessiveness, lust versus love. Like, what about these false loves that aren't really love? Because jealousy is not love. That's possessing. That's possession. Objectifying someone. Love is equal, but when you have someone who you put on a pedestal, which we've seen a lot, right? Yeah. I did it. We've all done that when we were a teenager, for sure, right? Like, oh my God. But what about these fake, false sort of, you know, lust and jealousy and pedestals? And what do you think of all that? Or what can people learn about all that?
I think it teaches you about yourself.
Hmm.
You know, if you have those expectations, wow. Yeah, or nice if you clip. Have those needs,
the neediness, yeah.
It's time for you to look at yourself and see what you're missing, or what's, yeah. You know, what you're not addressing inside of you. Or, you know, I often just go back, you know, what happened to you back there that yeah. you are still holding on to, that, like, you just got to let go of some stuff and fill yourself.
That blows my mind. Like, that's such an incredible answer. I love that answer. I used to joke, so I'll expose myself, but with my, you know, Jenny. You know,
but you're
going
to stay dressed, right?
Sorry?
You're going to stay dressed, right?
I will, yeah. It's not going to be that embarrassing. We're going to do a tarp, no tarp show, eh, bud? We'll do that. People will tune in for that.
Exactly.
Nobody needs dad bod. But you know Jenny, obviously, you know my ex-wife. So Jenny and I, one of the things we got into, she sucked me in. I swear it wasn't me. Got into The Bachelor a little bit, right? The Bachelor and The Bachelorette. Uh-huh. I did it as a study of people as a coach, personally. Uh-huh. I was, but it was interesting. And one of the phenomena that I always was fascinated by, there, you know, the first night, for those of you who don't know, there's like 25 women, one bachelor, one guy who's going to hopefully get married. And there's usually a subset of women that don't even get to talk to the guy because there's too many people. And he lets them, some of them go. And some of them fall apart completely. They're like, oh my God, I loved him so much. And I'm like, you don't even know him. What are you talking about? And that's where I think I love what you said. Like, understanding the feeling that you're having of neediness. And, you know, I've worked with some clients that are dying to have a relationship. And, you know, we talk about my own neediness sometimes, which is too bad, but I'm working on it. But when you have neediness, it's a repelling force.
Yep.
And people are like, I can't believe I can't meet a guy, but you're being needy. Yep. So that pushes people away.
Yep.
So it's not about, and what people make a big mistake is they're like, well, I just got to find the right person. No. Be the right person. Then you need to change. Yep. So, yeah.
Oh, and having that checklist, right?
Yeah, the checklist is fun too. Yeah, I love the checklist. Yeah.
Instead of just meet someone and maybe there's just something that happens. I mean, that whole dating scene now is...
Oh, it's crazy.
It's crazy.
Trust me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that answer. I was wondering, Sarah, and I'm moving on a bit to a next topic here, Dave. So if you want to call back after, let me know.
Yeah, go for it.
I'm under the impression today we seem to want to get away from our differences and kind of be all the same.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Yeah.
Nice. I'm curious about your thoughts on this, because I feel like sometimes we have that message of it's embrace our differences, but then sometimes we seem to really get triggered or mad when someone's different. So I'm curious about what you think about this.
Oh, I'm all about difference. Yeah. And I think part of that is being non-judgmental, being curious, taking your ego out of it. You know, my way isn't the only way. I think difference is what makes the world go round. And if we could all accept each other's differences, we wouldn't be so fucked up.
Yeah.
And I think that comes from a fear of the unknown. And so people just want to, you know, we're losing religion, we're losing cultural traditions, we're, you know, we're losing so much of the richness of our of what makes us, humanity, each of us, yeah, who we are, yeah, where we're just this mass of different people who could bring so much to each other. But I think fear stops that. And, you know, people don't want to get lost, or they feel threatened, or, you know, intermarriage, you know, it's a huge thing where they feel they're just going to lose who they are. But it doesn't have to be that. So I think it's such a loss for humanity and for all of our cultures to all become beige.
I like that you brought culture into this, because it's one of the areas in which I feel like we're, as you mentioned, trying to be the same, or we're not willing to want to accept or discover these differences, which are very interesting.
Yeah.
Because today I really feel like we're walking on eggshells whenever we're talking about a specific subject. It looks like people get triggered like really fast, and so we can't talk about these things. And I'm a big believer in, of course, being able to debate, to talk about things we disagree with. I think we all evolve if we're able to do so. But yeah, that's an interesting message there.
And that's love.
That's actually a form of love.
That's acceptance. A form of love.
Acceptance. That's one right. of the big things that I was sort of taught in my readings around love, acceptance and freedom. One is freedom to just like, if you're with someone, let them be themselves. Like, are you going to eat your eggs like that? You know, that stuff. Like, no. Freedom, acceptance. It's a really good point, man. Like, I like that a lot. But I think, you know, if you thought about it, you would never in a million years want to eat the same meal for the, some people do, very few, but you'd eat the exact same meal the rest of your life. But I think what it comes down to is some people feel that when people live a different way, it's a threat.
Yep.
They're threatened by it. And instead of being curious, you said an amazing word, just be curious. So, you know, like I have a friend who's gay in New York, and like, when we met and we become really close, but I just asked him a bunch of questions because I'm personally not, and I don't know much about it.
Yeah.
I'm like, what's it all about? What's it like? How do you feel? Blah, blah, blah. He's showing me what he's up to. But curiosity is so disarming. And we've talked about this, and we're going to hammer this message home. So for example, people that hate us, if they may, hate the topic. Like, let's talk really, really passionately about a topic. But when you start telling them, well, you're an idiot, you're foolish, you're a moron, stop the personal attacks, because to me, that's a sign you have a very weak argument. If you have to go personal, you can't get your shit together upstairs to talk about the actual thing. And here's the other thing. Somewhere someone wrote that we all have to agree on everything.
Yeah.
Where the hell did that come from?
Yep.
We're humans. We're all different. Can't we have different points of view?
Yeah. And Sarah even mentioned love being one part of that discussion and debate. And I found that very, very interesting, because I never saw it that way. But it's true to some extent. I mean, yeah, you're loving by wanting to, I guess, to be curious, to open your mind and be ready to necessarily accept, but want it.
Just to hear out. Just to share. Just to connect. For me, connection is a huge, huge part of it. And listen. No one knows how to listen. Not no one. That's really generalizing. Difficult. Sorry. Oops. But
so not loving and judgy.
Listening is such a skill that I think is being lost. And maybe that's partly just in the way that we communicate now, whether it's all the technology. Just sitting face to face is a totally different kind of listening than, you know, listening when you're typing on a keyboard. But, you know, just being heard is such a huge thing for so many people.
Okay, if we can get one message out from this podcast, it's the gift you can give people by hearing them, really hearing them. Don't think of your next thought. And it's funny, like, so I've been doing, my personal work continues, but I got into
It's a anger. Lifelong work.
It's a lot of work. I'm a mess, but it's fine. But what's interesting is I was getting into anger stuff. And why do I get angry? And the book I was reading was very clear and very good about saying, look, there's a trigger to your anger and a cause. And one of my big causes I just learned about is I hate it when I'm not seen. So like a lot of people have that. When a guy cuts you off in traffic, you're, oh my God, he didn't see me. When you're not seen, you don't exist.
Yep.
You're not significant anymore. So there's an interesting need in there. So I find that kind of fascinating, but it's the world just needs some of these messages to get out, to say like, to expect us to all be the same and be homogenized. Like, I've seen it. I've seen people, a lot of people love the security of seeing someone else do what they're doing. And you said something really important, the unknown. We're doing a topic on this because that's a big topic for me. The unknown is where life is lived.
Yeah.
The unknown is alive. It's the cutting edge of life. The known is the past. So we have to be willing to try new ways, new things. I'm going to shift gears. So let's get to, you know, one of the causes of all this shit, which is parents. Personally being the victim of like some pretty severe abuse, and I'll probably tell it one day. I really didn't want to make the podcast about my abuse because that's not what I want to do. But I got some other stories. We'll pull out Manny soon. But as a, someone who grew up, you know, pretty intensely abused, I know what it can do to a psyche and a life. Parental love. What's your take on it? Because we see an awful lot of conditional love in that realm. What do you think?
I grew up the opposite of you, thankfully.
Yeah.
And
that's why you have a 38-year-old 38-year marriage and I'm single at mid-50s.
Love was unconditional.
Okay.
In our
amazing
house.
Cool.
I don't even like to say, do we make mistakes as we're parents? We bumble our way through. We do our best in the moment because that's the choice we make then. So looking back and say, I'll say for me, could I have done things differently? Oh yeah, for sure. Did I do things that have affected my kids and the way they are now? 1,000,000%. So I'm weary of giving an opinion of something that I don't have any experience with.
Yeah.
But I will say, as we said, just when I came in, even just the good girl, bad girl, right. You know, good right. boy, bad boy. I'm a grandparent and I try and be conscious of it, you know, so I'll say, oh, you know, good listening. You know, like I try and name what the behavior is, not just you're a good person or a bad person because of what you've done. But I see it like it's so easy. Good, yeah, good boy. Good for you.
Yeah.
It's not about being good or bad. And they take it on. I see how it affects them. They take it on. They it want does. That praise. Yeah. They, you know, and they want to be good. Children.
Yeah. Well, one of the patterns we see, not every parent, obviously, but we see this withdrawal of love when the child does things that aren't in your values. When they're, it is a way of control. And some parents are like, they will abandon the child. They'll like go to your room. They'll like, they reject the child. Yeah. Right. And so this causes a lot of insecurity and a lot of the psychology problems we see in the world today. And it's kind of interesting that way, but
do you think it's worse now than it used to be?
It's better now. I think it's better.
I think so.
It's better.
Yeah.
No.
So why are kids so messed up?
Well, I mean, who knows? But there's, I mean, we'll get into the whole, I mean, we got video games, we got lots of pot going on, we got phones, we got lots of things to blame. But I think at the end of the day, one of the things I do notice in parenting, and probably do a parenting chat at some point, man, but, I see parents treat their kids the way they would never treat a stranger. So for example, like mm-hmm. I remember mm-hmm. noticing at the daycare, a parent who's stressed because they're late, they're like, get your jacket off. And I wanted to make a YouTube, we might do it, make a YouTube where I go up to adults and do the things that people do to their children, right? It's like, true. Take your jacket off. Like,
yep.
It's, you would never, would you ever do that?
No, of course.
Dude, you come, I come to your house for dinner. You're going to make me finish my food? So you're going to go, no. You finish your broccoli, Dave. You'd never do that, no. Would you?
I mean, not that you say so. I might consider it, but usually no. I'm not a parent. I'm not a parent, right? So, but I totally agree with your point. Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah, I've seen it a million times. We will treat, we will even treat our loved ones.
That's
we
what
would
I was
never
say.
Treat.
Yeah.
Like just common, even common courtesy.
Yep.
So.
Yep.
Cool. All right. I think there's a couple other topics and then I want to get into the book. Because I think there's some interest. I just want to have a little, it is called a journal of self-discovery.
It
so
is.
Let's do some book discovering in a minute. I want to talk about something that's really important. And certain people freak out and get really, really negative about love for the earth. It's our home. But people still get angry sometimes. It's fear, usually. Fear that it's going to cut them off from their, I don't know, whatever. If you're in oil, it's whatever. But where do you think things are, and where do you think we can go with love for our home, for our planet?
You know, I think there's a connection with nature that's so natural for humans.
Mm.
Well, we're just part of the ecosystem.
Sure.
Right? Everything is part of that ecosystem. So I think part of it is just being cut off from it. I mean, yeah. I've been to cities or, you know, to organizations. There's this organization in Milwaukee where they had inner city kids come and spend the day at this huge park. Like it's a block of park area where there's trees and they can go skating stuff. Because some of these kids have never seen trees.
Yeah.
Can you imagine? It blew me away when I first was with these people. So I think, you know, recognizing and feeling that part of nature is such a, it's part of who we are. It's such a gift. And I think there is a fear of not understanding it. I think there's a fear of the power of it.
Mm.
And I think there's ignorance.
Yeah, I would add to that, some people are afraid, honestly, to go to nature properly or go to nature, you got to slow down.
Yeah.
And I always joke, like, when you slow down, the demons come.
Yeah.
Personally, as a skier and a hiker and a mountain biker, and like, I recently went through a bit of a tougher period, and I realized I hadn't gotten out of the city in a while.
Yep.
And I got out of the city for 2 days. And I did a bunch of stuff. I was back, and it's very healing, nature.
Well, in Japan, you can go tree bathing.
Tree bathing. Yeah.
It's actually a type of therapy now. Yeah,
what is that?
You go walk in the forest.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Literally. Yeah.
They're working on science around that, actually. I swear to God. Around the power of healing nature, being in nature, being healing. And again, this is like, again, our podcast is tilted toward dudes, but there's lots of fun you can have in nature and still maintain. You know, we still want to be loving warriors, right? Like, nothing wrong with being embracing our warrior 100%. Spirit. But get your ass outside too, right? And I think it's a big part of stuff.
It's strengthening.
So I'm glad you said that. Very.
It's strengthening to be connecting with, we're talking about nature, to be connecting with nature or with the world, having such a strong connection. It's empowering.
I think it is, yeah. Big time.
You guys think because we're, you know, urbanizing everything, becoming large cities, do you think that has an effect on how we live our lives?
Yeah,
I'm curious.
I do. I think it changes the air we breathe. I think when you step on concrete instead of earth, it affects your body differently. Concrete is hard and it's hot. It doesn't feed you. There's no connection to something living. When you walk on the earth or grass or sand, it's alive. So I do, and we're spending a lot of time in front of our screens, but don't get me started on that one.
Screens are another day, what else do I want to talk about? Oh, I got a few more, and then I really want to dive into the book. One more before the book. So of the people that I know quite a few people, like quite a few, many of them successful marriages, but really, if I did the actual percentage, it's not. And as we know, divorces are 50%. Is our model of love, like, is there an issue there? Is it broken? Is there something we could do differently? Like, what's going on? Like, there's just so many. I'm one of them. I mean, I got divorced. But, you know, and I'll just quickly say, like, I feel like near the end of my marriage versus now, Jenny and I have way more love than we used to at the end of our marriage.
Yeah.
Right? And I have a follow-up after that because let me ask you the first one first.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think it's a model of marriage, not a model of love.
Ah, good point.
Because I think they're different.
Very good point.
And you know, when people used to get married 200 years ago, they got married for totally different reasons than why they get married now. Women had to get married.
Yeah.
They could survive without a husband. They would have to live with their parents or be a spinster and go live with the other women. For women, it was, they had no choice, and they had to have children. Like that's what they were here for. Yeah. And it was a matter of survival, and men needed the women so they could procreate and be taken care of while they, like, it was a whole system. And so I think there were different expectations of what marriage meant. And so I think maybe the expectations now might not be quite realistic.
Sarah, what's your take on marriage?
Awesome.
Would you say that...
With a caveat.
What is it?
It's work.
Right.
Yeah, it's work.
But now that, you know, the expectations have changed, that we live in a different era than we used to, do you consider marriage still something very important? Do you consider this as being essential? Or, I mean, you're not essential because now we see a lot of people that don't get married, but do you think there's an added value to getting married?
I do. And actually, there's a lot of studies about people who are married or who have partners who share their lives with someone, have a deep relationship with someone. The support that you get, the constant connection that you have with someone, actually, it nurtures your health. Do I think it's essential? No, if you're in a bad relationship, get out. Like, don't stay married just because you said you would be married forever. I think that's bad. You know, you have to keep choosing. I know I chose that, I Choose Love, that title, for a reason. It is a choice, and you always have the choice. I think for me, the model that I think is kind of too bad is people giving up too fast.
Yeah.
Do you think not getting married could make that giving up faster than getting married? Would that be one of the advantages, you would say? Because I think I have examples of people who decide to love even if they're not married. So I'm always sometimes debating with myself in terms of, is there, again, that extra reason today to want to get married?
Oh, I would say a committed relationship. I don't know that I really care if it's marriage or not. I'm just saying a committed relationship. I know people who are, well, it's the commitment. So yeah, for some people it makes a difference to sign the paper, and for some people it doesn't. I mean, we're living in Quebec,
right?
How many Quebecers don't get married? And yeah. So yeah, I would redefine it as a committed relationship rather than marriage. Yeah.
Yeah. And I go back to, I think a lot of people get married to expect that someone's going to meet all their needs or make them happy. And that's not really what it's about. It's about something else, right?
Yeah, 100%.
So, let's dive into the book. Just some fun things that I really drew me and will pop up throughout the podcast as we meander along. The law of karma. You get to feel the way you make others feel. I love that. That's powerful.
Yeah. What goes around comes around.
It's great, especially for angry folk. You have a beautiful story during COVID, and I'm just going to tell the ending, and I want people to buy the book anyway, where your palms met through at the glass. And I think connection, you know, one of the equations that we talk about here is connection is so critical to love. Vulnerability is so critical to connection. So I think this was where you were both being vulnerable, right?
Yep, absolutely.
Do you want to tell us a little bit about it? Just a little bit about that? Do you remember it?
I absolutely do. It was actually during the George Floyd time.
Oh, okay.
And that time, it really affected me. I'm a founder of a women's group called Magnolia Moonshot 2030. Okay. And essentially, we want to make the world a better place by bringing... I'll say women's voice into the world, but that doesn't mean erasing men, just having more of a balance. And we had really, a number of the women are African American, and we had brutal, brutal, honest conversations about white privilege. And my head was really in this
space.
And I went into a store to get some glasses, and the fellow serving me was this lovely black man. And I was so into it. And I'm trying to remember the first thing I said to him. I don't even know if I have it in there. Oh, yeah.
You asked about his story.
It was something, I must have said something about what's going on now. Because I remember him telling me about him taking certain routes to work because they were easier for him.
Yep.
And he started sharing, I guess, because of the way that I was just asking him questions. I was just curious about his experience. Because even I learned with some of these women, you know, they would say, well, yeah, it's like when we walk into the grocery store. And I'm like, what are you talking about? You walk into the grocery store. They said, yeah, well, whenever I walk into a grocery store, a clerk shows up at the end of the aisle. I'm like, why? Like, duh. Stupid, privileged white person. Sure. Yeah, they're watching to make sure they don't steal. So I became very curious about all the things that I had no clue about. So I guess in the way I was asking this guy just questions, you know, he talked to me. And when I was leaving, and it was COVID time, so there was a window between me and him at the cash. And I said, thank you so much for, you know, for sharing with me. And he said, well, no white person has ever asked me the questions you were asking me. And we just looked at each other, and I put my hand on the palm on the window, and he put his on. And, like, we both had tears. Like, it was such a beautiful opening. And that was just me being curious and him being heard. And it was really special.
Nice.
Yeah.
That was a beautiful story.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I've had moments like that, and I've had moments like that with people I've been angry with first and fought with.
Yep.
And then you can change it. It's pretty cool. Timely. Everyone likes to be heard, but what I like about this page, listening does not mean agreeing. This to me is massive. It doesn't mean you agree to just listen. So I love that. That's another cool one. I folded a few more pages. Let's see what I got. Here we go. I have it a bunch.
I like folded pages.
Yeah,
that makes me feel good.
How often do you say I am angry versus I am feeling anger or angry? So we talked about that. That's critical. We don't want to internalize things like that. We got to cover.
Well, and just because you feel some way doesn't mean that's who you are. You're just feeling it.
Yeah. We talked about that inner critic today. So we do not have to be a prisoner to the critic who lurks inside. So, like I said, you know, Manny, like one day we'll talk about what our inner chatter is. Like, chatter's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
The crazy roommate, as I mentioned earlier, right? Yeah. So, a couple more and then
monkey
we'll,
brain.
Yeah, monkey brain. Let's see. I think I got a couple more. Oh, this is a great one. Why do we forget to play as we get older?
Why?
Everyone gets so serious and heavy. I remember as a kid going, what the hell is everyone doing?
Yeah.
What are we all doing? We should play more.
But why do we do that? I don't understand. Do you still play?
Maybe not as often that I think I should be playing. So no, maybe not enough.
There's no should. You could.
You could.
I could. Yeah. That's true.
No should.
I consciously play. Like, I consciously make time to play. Like, so now I wasn't playing any sports, and I was like, I gotta play. So I'm playing beach volleyball just for fun.
Oh, that's
cool. Great. Yeah.
Do you do it on a daily basis? Because I play soccer like once a week. So that's
you
like,
do. Okay.
Do I consider that
better
a lot?
Than nothing.
Sure. Yeah, better than nothing. Yeah. Sure.
But play can also just be lighthearted.
Playful.
Yeah, be playful.
Yeah.
I'll go skip down the street with my dog because it.
You know what's interesting in the world too? So I had a moment, and so I've been to different conferences. I went to a conference, came out of it really like, wow, this was amazing. Put my headphones in, and I just was dancing a bit in the airport. You know, maybe. And everyone looks at you like you're, when you're happy or like joyous or playful like that, they think you're nuts.
Yep.
Everybody looked at me like I was insane. They're like, what the fuck's wrong with this guy? But I had a big opening and I felt amazing. And so, you know, it's interesting that way. So, so a couple last things before we get to where we're going. We'll get a little aspirational, but unconditional love. Can we get there? And what's kind of the road? Is there a road to it? I think a lot of what we talked about, right? Curiosity, lack of judgment, but unconditional love.
No ego.
Take the ego out?
No ego.
OK. Okay.
It's not about me.
Yeah.
It's about you doing your thing, and that's who you are, and I can just love you anyways.
I'm glad you said that, because that triggers another thing I heard on another podcast, which is a lot of people approach love this way, or relationship love this way. They're like, what can I get?
Yeah.
Not what can I give? So it's really love. Love is a lot about giving, you know? So,
and can I just say also, we're talking a lot about loving certain people, but there's more to it than just projecting love on people.
Yeah.
You know, because that's very outward focused.
Yeah.
Well,
I think we talked about the self-love component of it, right? There's the internal feeling. Again, I go back to being love, right? Being that. And I think, you know, with our, what we're trying to talk about, Manny, and where we're trying to go, you know,